Morning.
Good morning. Yeah, the new Skype is weird. It like says ringing others and waiting for them to answer. I don't know. And that's why I got a delay when I recorded the other podcast. I was like, I don't usually listen to it. I just throw it out there. And I was like, wow, it's 11 seconds in and I didn't hear anybody's voice.
Chris, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, how are you?
Pretty good. Yeah, I had a button for me to join the call.
Yeah, there
Yeah,
you
I saw
go.
that too. Yeah.
And it
Now I can
defaults to
see both
video.
your pictures at the same time.
Yeah, it's a fancy new upgrade that Rob hates. Rob
Guess
hates
what?
upgrades.
It didn't make me download a new version today.
Oh, me neither. How about that? They might have heard you. They might have heard your
Maybe.
whining.
Yeah. Seriously? I got a million programs here. None of them update every other week, except for this one.
So Rob really loved Shang-Chi.
Man, was that a good movie?
Yeah, cool.
The whole family saw it yesterday on Disney Plus.
Yeah, there you go.
Great movie. Great movie.
Yeah, I liked
You
it. I think I liked Eternals better though. I did
haven't gotten to
I
that one yet.
absolutely love the bus scene though.
Yeah.
And I don't know, there's just something about the choreography and stuff in it that
Well, the
just
fight,
like
yeah, that's what I mean. The fight scenes were terrific.
well it makes it just like God dang. It makes it like watching like Kung Fu Theater in the back in the 70s. It
Right?
kind of had that vibe. Without the voiceover,
At the beginning, though, I don't know if you remember, but like the whole beginning's like all in Chinese with subtitles, and Allie turns and says, "Is the whole movie gonna be like
Yeah. It's
Because of
like,
course
please
they can
no.
read, but sometimes, if it's bigger words, they can't get through the whole thing before
Yeah.
it scrolls to the next subtitle. So we're like, no, it's just the beginning.
When I was young, I didn't like subtitles. It took me a while, and now everything is subtitled because I watch everything in closed caption. So everything is subtitled. Because I can't hear worth a damn.
That's what me and Stacy do at night when we're watching something. We usually turn the subtitles on.
Yeah, I found out that me and Bill watch two programs totally differently. Like, I watch it dubbed, and he doesn't. Like Money Heist, he watches, gets a different experience than I do, and then the same with Savings, Who Killed Sarah. So we both watch it differently, but I liked it. I like the dub voices. So unless it's really bad dub voices, then I don't
That's what I
want.
was gonna say. You
Yeah,
gotta
if it's if
sometimes
it's
it could be bad.
If it's really bad, I don't I'll switch over, but I don't often do that, especially with the new stuff, because they're usually pretty good. So happy thanks pre-Thanksgiving week.
I can't wait.
Yeah. You loosen up the belt a little bit
Yeah,
there, Rob.
that's right.
Yeah.
I got to. I'm looking forward to it.
Mike, one more year and we'll have done this podcast for a decade.
Wow.
Oh, that's insane.
It's been 9 years as of last month, so next year will be 10 years since we started
Doesn't
it.
seem that long. It really
Oh, I mean,
doesn't.
that means I've known you for like a decade now.
Yeah, it's
That's pretty
incredible.
crazy. I'll have to send you guys a an anniversary present. Yeah,
There
what
you
is
go.
10 year? 10 year? I don't know.
I think it's
I'll
wood.
figure it out.
No, I don't know what it is.
I'll give you.
I
I'll
should
give you
know
some
these
wood.
things.
You're gonna give us both wood.
That's pretty cool. At the
And heirloom.
same time.
I'm only human.
Well, it's actually tin or aluminum, so you're gonna have to become less human
Oh,
by by next year.
I'll send you some tin cans.
Yeah, actually, right now aluminum is scarce. I think it's hard to there's
aluminum?
Like an aluminum shortage. So it's yeah, that's actually good timing for our gifts.
If
yeah,
you
pay a pretty penny.
If you go to the canned soda aisle, you usually see a lot of cans out, but you can get bottled for some reason.
Yeah, crazy. I guess glass is not.
You know what? Speaking of shortages, Mike, have you called Brenda again to see if we can order boards or no?
Well, I ordered boards, but I ordered whatever they offered. I said, "Do they fit the bag?" And she said, "Yeah." So.
But when was this?
They're not their normal boards though. They're not halfbacks. They're getting them from another vendor.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah. So I just ordered those because I can't wait. And I have.
All right,
I'll
call her tomorrow.
12 to 14 week wait. So I placed mine, even though right now I'm about at 1,100.
Mm-hmm.
I've made it through almost the first box, but I still have 200 more left. And then I'll be on my last 1,000, so I should be able to make it. And the way they're shipping, like, they ship my shit out of order. That was so weird. I wrote them a letter, and they said, well, one box was too big. And I was like, no, it's not. What are you talking about?
UCBS, you mean?
Yeah. So they uh-huh. I have this week's order already in hand. I haven't processed it into the database yet, but I unpackaged it. And then last week's is marked for shipping, and so is this coming week. So they must have got the orders, like, for this coming Thanksgiving week. They must have got them early or something.
They must have. I noticed the same thing. But mine are coming, came in the right order. So, like, whatever, 2 weeks ago, I came, like, earlier this week, and then last week's should be here shortly, and this week is packaged.
Yeah, I usually organize my books by and then sort them by alphabetically, and I have a indie pile and then a DC pile and a Marvel pile. This week's Marvel books only had two.
Oh wow!
So it must have been one of those like shortages. It had like Hulk number one and Dark Ages or something number three, and that was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Chris, we usually go through E. Gerber for bags and boards, Mylar. And when we called a while back, a few weeks ago now, you couldn't even place an order for backing boards at that time, the original time. They had no estimate, nothing. You couldn't get, mm-hmm. you know, part of the whole paper shortage issue.
You couldn't even get into the queue saying, well, just give them
nope.
to me when you...
They wouldn't
when you get them,
any
they wouldn't accept it.
Because they had no idea.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy. But you know what I was saying, too, is that, you know, if you have such a paper shortage, then, I don't know, why wouldn't you pull back on the number of variant covers?
Because that's where the money is.
Printing all this paper for the same story over and over again.
No, but I think it's... For the publisher, they like put out what makes us money. What's making us the most money? Well, 10
yeah.
copies of
yeah.
Batman is making us the most money. So pull back on the stuff that's not giving us the most money because you're answering to stockholders.
I guess you're right.
You're saying why is there a shortage of? Would you rather have them publishing Inferior 5 number 6? Probably as a reader, yeah, but. As a stockholder,
yes.
you're like, shit, there's like 25 people ordering it. What do I want it?
Yeah,
put it
yeah.
out there, you know?
I guess you're right. I guess you're right. It's just frustrating. Especially when DCBS says they can't get a hold of DC books. Like, you're the distributor of DC. What do you mean you can't get a hold of them?
Well, they're having their own pay. They're having their...
They run through.
They still have to get... the books from the printers to the distributor.
Yeah.
So they're having issues, and then they queue up. The way DCBS queues up their priority is they queue them up by LCSs and then people.
Well, no. They go mic, then
No,
LCSs,
you'd be
and then.
surprised. You, I wish that, or I wouldn't have like 2 weeks shipping in the same week. It's not the case, and plus they know I'm pretty. I don't usually knock on their door and bug them. I like just. I have no hurry to read this week's books.
Yeah.
I'm
You're
like,
like, that guy has enough comics to read for the rest of his life.
yeah. So it's like they're coming, but I do get like I do have my like things like. Why are they shipping out of order? That bugs me. Like I have
Yeah.
my little pet peeves. Like I don't want them shipped out of order. I want like, especially if there's like a weekly book or one of those things that comes out. Like Detective is comes out pretty quickly. Don't ship me them out of order.
Yeah.
But usually it seems like you're right as long as you know you are getting it.
Yeah, I'm good 'cause I'm gonna get it eventually. And I'm on
I would be
vacation, so
more
it's like
I would be
I'm not gonna
go
get my boxes for
ahead.
till next week because
I
I'm
was just gonna say
yeah.
that I used to be a little more concerned when things were shipping late because I literally was ready to start reading them, but now I'm like 3 weeks behind from like
But
whenever they
also
have the
for
delay.
you, Rob, it gives you the opportunity to crack open the stack of collected editions that you're getting.
That's true. Yeah.
Like
Yeah, that's another good
you
point.
don't know how hard it was, but I didn't get any of those omnibuses. I held
What? You didn't
back
get
on
any?
all of them. Yeah,
You didn't even get the June 1962 one?
No.
Oh, good for
Because
you.
I realized what that one was. I read the solicit and I was hoping that they were doing the I was hoping that they were doing it month by month
Yeah, they're
and they're
not, though.
not. It's like a year apart. So
Yeah,
it's
it's the
like
first Spider-Man. So it looks like they're highlighting one big book and then everything else that came out that
yeah,
same
so I
month.
was like, yeah, that's kind of cool, but the fact that they're not
It
you don't
makes it
get to
easier for you to
oh
back out.
yeah. Yeah,
Yeah.
it was Well, yeah, I don't know. The one I wanted more than that one was the thing. I wanted that omnibus.
Yeah, those are the two that I got. I didn't get the Luke Cage one because I already have some, what do you call them? Epics?
Yeah. Yeah, so like I figured I'm sticking with the epics and that's it. And then yeah, I saved like $600, man. It's a lot.
That's awesome.
But it's the good thing is that extra money, which my goal was to come down for another storage unit, so that's more than sufficient if I could stay at that level, you know.
Yeah, it's great.
So it's like I'm still paying that m amount, but I'm paying it for room.
Oh, you're sticking to your guns.
Yeah, I just. If my well Chris has seen that room, so he probably can understand, but
Is that where you slept, Chris?
No, you're talking about the middle, the room in the middle of the
yeah,
upstairs.
yeah.
Yeah. No, we slept in the guest room, but it's kind of like a, well, it normally would probably be an office or something like that.
Yeah, the middle one.
Or a third bedroom.
But it's all collected editions. And it's got so bad I can't even walk in there. We sold our Elantra and I had to like do yoga to try to like contort myself to get in there and get the D, what do you call it? The ownership
Yeah.
certificate, whatever they call it.
I forget what it's called, but yeah, I know what you mean. Why didn't you have Barb go in there?
Because I don't want her to. I don't want all, like 7,000 books to fall on her. For her sake and my book's sake. If they fall on
Instead
me
of
and I
doing
get
yoga,
crushed,
she would
I'm
just
okay.
kick her way through.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a good point, Chris.
Yeah, she would just punch holes in the books, knock them over.
You're like, I'm not dancing around these things. That's awesome.
Yeah, so like that helps with the decision. It's like, God dang, I can't even move in this room. And to be truthful, like those omnibus, that'll take, like, even if I dedicated myself a whole month to get through an omnibus, which is like 1500 pages, that's a whole month of reading that I'm not reading anything else.
Yeah.
And then if you throw in the digital, like I pay for Marvel Unlimited, I pay for Comixology, I pay for DC Unlimited. You throw in the fact that a lot of that stuff is there, and I can pull that up like on demand in the middle of the night. If I feel like reading like Deathlok in the middle of the night, I can read Deathlok.
Yep.
And it's kind of good for somebody like me. Where the omnibus, you're focused on one topic, my mind races. Like, it's hard for me to stay on target because I'm a mood reader. Like, one morning I might want to read Deathlok, and then the next morning I want to read something else. So yeah, it's tough, but
I stay focused.
Yeah, it all kind of adds up to more than one person could ever possibly read. When you put it all together, the digital and the all the omnibuses.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome to have it, but eventually I'm going to have
it. I guess it's a balance, right, between like having the accessibility for
reread.
If it's there, if you want to read it, you have it, you know, to have that library, balance between having a library and having space, you know.
Yeah, if you just want to reread something, then digital is probably a lot better because you can find it, you can access it from anywhere and read it that way.
Mm-hmm.
If you have that collector mentality, then it's awesome that you have this volume that only has, you know, so many printed copies. But when's the next time you're going to pop that sucker open?
I don't understand. I can't rationalize why I need some of these collected editions. Like, I don't know why I need them.
God, they're nice though, man. And the fact that those have the letters pages.
I've got the issues. I got the issues. I got the digital. Like, why do I need this collected edition? I could pull my comics out that I bought.
Yeah, that's true.
But I want them.
I feel like even with everything that I read, I feel like I get my digital subscriptions money's worth every week. I mean, a month. For what I pay, what I pay for them, mm-hmm. Like I read enough books to warrant a monthly fee.
Yeah, it's not hard to get your value.
Yeah, because it's so cheap.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't get my money's worth at all because I'm constantly reading the new stuff. And then I have, as a, you know, a project, okay, now I'm reading all of the, like I'm reading Captain America. So if I have extra time, I'm reading just the Captain America stuff. So I'm wasting my money, but I still have the DC app still. I just keep letting it renew. I can't tell you the last time I've read anything off the app just because I don't have time.
I did pick up another cap, so I'm still slowly filling in those Steranko issues, which are expensive.
They are. Which one did you get?
Oh God, I can't remember. I'd have to flip through. I think there's like a grave site on it.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know what number that is, but I caps it's like a greenish front. Background maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So. Yeah, and then I want to focus on my spawns. I want to finish that thing. So.
Yeah, spawn is going to be a expensive one for you too.
Yeah, but the way I'm approaching that is I'm just getting one a month.
Gotcha, got.
So it's going to be slow, but I don't have too many. I mean, that'll just be over the course of 20 months. I only have like 20 more to go.
My next focus that I'm doing very slowly, not one a month, probably one, probably like 3 or 4 a year, is Flash.
Oh yeah.
Not the
You're
showcase, obviously,
you're
but
way more focused than me though.
just the
Yeah.
actual Flash issues from 105 up.
You're way more focused than me. I just switch all the time. 'Cause I'm like getting Astonishing Tales now to finish up my Deathlok. 'Cause I one of the things that's bad is I started the retro segment in Geek Brunch. Not the
Yeah.
re not the retro, but the
Spawning points.
fanzine frenzy.
Oh, okay.
I started that, and those articles, man, they are so good that it's like, I want to read this. I want to read this. Yeah, they send me down the rabbit hole, man. Like, why don't I have the $6 million Man magazine? I don't understand. But we got some retro stuff, maybe.
We actually have, I think, some retro stuff, Chris.
Good.
Did you
Good, good.
listen to our episode last time? Or did you
I
turn it
haven't
off and
yet.
just
I
come?
am going to listen to it, but I
Okay.
haven't yet. Okay,
Yeah, we didn't
that's
have you helping us stay on target, I don't think. Oh.
next up on my that's next up on the queue.
Yeah, you're the lighthouse guiding our ship.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we go astray.
You know what I do you have HBO Max? Any of you?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
That King Richard's a good movie.
We're gonna watch it
Oh
tonight.
yeah.
Yeah, really good. Really enjoyed the heck out of it. We saw that
Looking forward to
last
that.
night.
It's so
What?
good if you're like if you're not interested in tennis or the Williams sisters, is it still good or?
Yes. Just because it's like a motivational thing, like yeah, I think it's good even if you're not into tennis.
Yeah, I'm not into tennis or the
Tennis is like wrestling for
sisters,
me.
but I think the story itself will be interesting.
I used to be really big in tennis, like around the time of Andre Agassi and Sampras, and like I would watch it regularly. And but I found that when I stopped playing it, like that's when I was playing tennis. When I stopped playing it, I sort of lost interest in watching it. So yeah, but the one thing that's cool about that is this has like Sampras in it. You know, it has stuff that made callbacks to other tennis players.
I was
But
kind of watching tennis around that same time, Mike. Maybe it was the early 90s, I want
yeah,
to say.
Monica Seles and all those.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I
it
think
was.
John McEnroe was just ending his career. I might have caught some of his last couple things and
Yeah.
stuff, and
He makes a little appearance in it.
he's a very entertaining fellow.
He's so angry. But
Yes.
like I didn't watch tennis at like when Serena and Venus came out like
No,
initially.
me neither.
So like I watched them much later when they were much older and already winning, you know. But like the mat the some of those early matches are incredible like to watch. Like the way they were filmed on this movie, it was really really well done. I liked it a lot. And
Yeah, I never had a period where I was interested in tennis.
it's so interesting from a financial standpoint because they came from poverty. And one thing that's so interesting is the father doesn't give in to these like Nike. Like if I grew up in poverty and you threw $3 million in front of me, I would say, yes, I'm signing, where do I sign? And he wouldn't do it. Like, it's crazy. Like,
You mean he like held out for a good deal for them and
yeah,
stuff? Is
because
that what you mean?
like, I don't know how true, like, when they make a movie, you don't know, like, the interpretation of it, right? It comes from a book or somebody's perspective. You don't know, like, the other side. But the way they portray it here is he was always looking out, like, for the best interests of the girls. Like, he didn't want them to get. He knew. He studied, like, tennis magazines and all that stuff, so he knew what others were making. And even if they'd offer, like, the same. Like, my daughters are better than any of these players. He's like, he really believed that his daughters were, they were. He's like, I got two Michael Jordans. What are you talking about? So it's like, I don't know, man. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to me and Stacey are gonna watch that tonight after the kids go to bed.
Yeah, and then Jungle Cruise opened up on Disney Plus. We want to watch that.
Yeah, we haven't checked that one
Get to
out yet.
see Black Adam in the jungle. All right. What do we got going on, guys?
Little bit of this, a little bit of that. I can start since I was absent last time.
That sounds great.
That sounds all right with you guys.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's I was looking, I was curious. It was like beginning of September the last time all three of us were on.
Sounds about right. That's been a while.
Yeah, 'cause it was you two last time, and then the time before that was me and Mike. But so I picked out some stories from the best of 75 years of DC Comics.
Oh, cool.
The actual title of it is Choke Gasp, a selection of handpicked EC Comics stories. It's pretty. It's a pretty huge volume. So Dark Horse, who does the EC stuff, it's like over 500 pages. It came out in December of 2019, and they actually organize it by artist. There's not an equal representation of all the artists. Like, there's only one Russ Heath story. Whereas there's like, for example, seven Jack Kamen illustrated stories. But in addition to them, you have Johnny Craig, Reed Crandall, Jack Davis, George Evans, Al Feldstein, Graham Ingalls, Bernie Krigstein, Harvey Kurtzman, Joe Orlando, John Severin, Alex Toth, Al Williamson, and Wally Wood. So quite a lineup there. Different writers, obviously. And then there's a note that most of the coloring on the original versions of the stories was done by Marie Severin. They digitally recolored them for this edition, but they tried to follow her coloring style. So I just picked out a few stories based on artists that I liked. They've got a nice like black and white close up for a page to separate the different artists with their signature in the middle of the page. And the first one I read was by Jack Kamen. It was written by Bill Gaines and Al Feldstein. And it's called Daddy Lost His Head. And it's from Vault of Horror number 19. And it's about a little girl. This is kind of a dark beginning here, where there's a little girl named Kathy, And she lives with her mother and her stepfather. And her stepfather, Martin, he physically abuses Kathy. And her mother is ill, and has to spend most of her time in bed. There's a woman that lives next door on the other side of their fence named Mrs. Thaumaturge. And she's an old lady. She's got stringy hair and no or little teeth, and seems kind of scary. And her stepfather uses her as a threat, that she's gonna when he's gonna call Miss Thaumaturge over, and she's a witch, and she's gonna take Kathy away and bake her in her oven. So Kathy's initially afraid of Mrs. Thaumaturge. Kathy's mother has an attack, and they call the doctor, but there's nothing he can do, and her mom passes away as well. So now she's stuck alone with her stepfather, and things get even worse for her. And she's so lonely that she gets to the point where even Mrs. Thaumaturge's company seems welcome. So she goes over to her house, and Mrs. Thaumaturge gives her some candy that she made. And later that night, she gets yelled at because she didn't do all her chores. When her stepfather's at work, she spends her whole day cooking and cleaning. So next time Mrs. Thaumaturge invites her over, she says, "I can't play with you. I'll get whipped if I do." And she says, so Mrs. Thaumaturge gives her her present anyway, and it's a doll-shaped candy that Kathy remarks kind of looks like her father. And she's like, "Well, I'm not going to eat it. I'm going to play with it. It looks so nice," she says. But Martin comes home, her stepfather, and she hasn't completely finished her chores because of this distraction. So he sends her to bed without supper. And it gets to the point where she's so hungry that she decides just to take a little bite out of the candy doll, and she bites off its hand. And there's a while her stepfather's out back cutting wood, and there's a loud scream from the backyard, and we find out that he cut off his hand. So he's lying in bed, his arms all wrapped up, and she's holding that the candy doll, and she says, he asked her where she got it, and she tells him, and he's like, "Give it to me, give it to me, it's evil." And she protests, "It's not evil, it's only candy." And she said, "See, it's only candy." And she takes a bite off. She bites the head of it off. So next thing you know, she's going to see Mrs. Thaumaturge and tell her the strangest thing just happened. And she holds up the doll without the head. You can guess how that went for her stepfather. But we get a nice little note from the host of Vault of Horror to let us know that Mrs. Thaumaturge adopted Kathy and is giving her flying lessons on a broom. So things turned out okay. Things turned out all right for Kathy. She's going to become a witch too. The next story I read was a Joe Orlando illustrated one, and it's a sci-fi story from Weird Fantasy, issue 18, written by Al Feldstein, and it's called Judgment Day. I think that this, once I had finished, I think I'd heard about this one before, because this is the best of EC Comics, and I think I had read about this story before, illustrated about some of the topics that DC Comics tackled back in the day. And so this is a sci-fi story called Judgment Day, and it's about a man who comes to a planet called Cyberinia, and he's an Earthman named Tarleton. And he's got an interesting spacesuit. It's like red, and then it's got like almost like a it's got a, like a helmet over top of a helmet. It's like a double helmet. The planet's all mechanical life. They basically did an experiment. They left a couple of these robots, which are like humanoid shaped, and they're all orange. They put a few of them on the planet, and they gave them a little bit of knowledge, and then left them to themselves to see what kind of society they would build, and whether he's there to analyze and see where they're at, and whether they can be included in the Galactic Republic. So they begin touring them around, and in a they've got a combustible engine, so they've got a big like 50s style car to drive around in, and they've established democratic rule. They've got an assembly plant, construction line, where they stop and go in and check it out, and they build more of themselves since they're robots. And Tarleton sees the construction process, and he remarks on the fact that there's only orange robots being made, and he asks about blue robots. Maybe there were both when they left them there. It's kind of left to be assumed, but the robot giving him the tour says, I'll show, we'll see the blue robot plant later. We just make the orange robots here. So it becomes pretty clear, a page or two more in, that they've segregated their society, and the blue town is where the blue robots live. That's on the south side of the city, and they it's far enough away that they need to take a bus. And the bus stop we see is separated. There's two sections, one for orange and one for blue. Then they get on the bus. There's a section in the back specifically for blue robots. And they get to Blue Town and the blue assembly plant. And the orange robot doesn't want to go in with Tarleton, has never been in the blue robot plant. And Tarleton insists that the orange robot comes in with him. And the blue robot that greets them, shows them the plant. And when the robots are done, they go into the educator, same as the orange robots do. It's set up, the two educators are set up to reinforce the society's divisions. As Tarleton remarks, their educator is basically parents, relatives, environment, school, all rolled into one. You can see where this is going. Tarleton tells them that they're not ready, and they ask why not, and he says, you got to ask yourself that question. He says, well, is there any hope for us? He said, yeah, there, of course there is. It looked like that on there wasn't hope on Earth for a while. But we've learned to live together. And the last panel, Tarleton takes his helmet off, and we see, I'll read you the caption. And inside the ship, the man removed his space helmet and shook his head. and the instrument lights made the beads of perspiration on his dark skin twinkle like distant stars. So an interesting sci-fi story. I wish we could say that since this was published, we've come farther along than we have. But the next story is a war story by John Severin from Two-Fisted Tales, number 19. It's by Harvey Kurtzman, and it's actually called War Story. It takes place in the Korean War. There's a experienced soldier and a rookie. They get fired on by a machine gun, and they drop down into a gully. The rookie sees an enemy soldier and fires at it, and he's like, "Easy, boy, you're wasting bullets. That feller's been dead a long, long time." And the rookie's dead. First time I've shot a man, but he's dead already. So I sit down in the gully, and the rookie's like, "I'm like an animal, a vicious killer." And just because he shot a guy, a Korean soldier that was already dead. And the more experienced guy says, "Well, I'll tell you, boy, there's killers and then there's killers." So he tells a story, which is the bulk of which is the story. Basically, he's got two twins on his platoon in the story, Dave and Duke. And besides looking like each other, they couldn't be more different from each other. One is real carefree, has a harmonica that he's always playing. And the other is the sort that goes to war because he likes to kill people. And throughout the story, at different moments, he is supposed to stand down and doesn't. They capture a colonel from the North Koreans, and he wants to stab him. He's gonna violate the Geneva Convention, and he's stopped. But and they take the colonel to a med station. But he's thinking to himself, he's gonna take the colonel out when he gets a chance with his knife. Meanwhile, there's an attack on the camp. The colonel gets killed by a strafing bullet, and the good brother, or the brother with the harmonica, he gets shot in the arm, so he's put in the tent. Well, his brother doesn't know about this switch, so he sneaks in and starts in the dark and starts stabbing the body that's lying on the lying in there with his knife multiple times before he sees the harmonica that's lying there. So there's your twist there. Mm. It's a good story, and it's interesting to see the different artists and the kind of like appropriateness for the story. Like Joe Orlando, his style kind of suits the science fiction. John Severin's style kind of, I found, suited the war story well. And the last story is that I read was by Wally Wood. Again, it's a sci-fi story, kind of style kind of suits the story. It's called Spawn of Mars from Weird Fantasy number 9, written by Bill Gaines and L. Feldstein. And real quickly, it's about a trip to Mars. It's written from the perspective of the one female and the first female to ever go on a trip to Mars. And she's with three men. Two are older, and one is more around her age, in like late 20s. they get to Mars, and she has this weird feeling that she's being watched. The three men go off, and they come back. The younger guy isn't with them, and the two older men say they were attacked by this horrible creature. And there's no way that the younger man could have survived. Well, he ends up showing up. And prior to this, he's shown an interest in her. And when he returns, her relief kind of caused her to realize her own feelings. But she does note that her head kind of hurts. They get back to Earth, and the two of them end up getting married. Months go by, and then one of the older men on the expedition comes to visit with his wife. The husband is upstairs, and the older man's wife asks to freshen up a bit, and so she's directed upstairs to the bathroom. They hear a scream, and she comes running back down, points upstairs in terror. And the protagonist, she has that strange feeling of being watched again. But the older man and his wife take off. Her husband comes downstairs, and she tells him, there's something really strange just happened. And he says, "I know, I've got to talk to you." And it turns out she's been under hypnotic suggestion this whole time. That's where the headaches have come from. He is actually the Martian, of course, and that killed the real guy. She's been shielded from his real appearance. But she's otherwise been happy. Well, she thinks that she doesn't really believe this. She thinks that, it's really this guy, and he's just been under a lot of stress. The shock of his experiences on Mars, and so they go for a drive, and he's not paying attention, and they drive off a cliff, and she survives the crash. Well, they both do, but it breaks the spell that he's had her under, and she sees him in reality. It's just this writhing. I mean, he's not even humanoid. He's just this writhing mass of like. It almost looks like tree roots. So she screams, and there's the car explodes and kills the Martian. She wakes up in a hospital, she's told that they found his identification, but her husband's been killed. But we've got to have our final zinger, So the nurse says, "Do you know you're going to have a baby?"
Oh.
So who knows what that child will look like. But that was the last one I read. But like I said, yeah, it's like almost 600 pages of story in this thing. So quite a sampler if you're
That's
looking,
pretty cool.
to get a broad. Look at EC Comics, might be a good choice.
You know, what's cool about that too is that, I think, at least for myself, like the stuff that I've read of them are by and large the horror stuff. It's kind of cool that they also have some of the other genres in there too, because, they did everything.
Yeah. Great, like everything but superheroes, really. But like all the other genres.
They didn't
Yeah,
get
it
into
seems,
romance, did they? I don't think they did. I know they got into crime, but.
Yeah, there's definitely crime stuff
And
in
there was
here.
some
It just so
Western
happened
and
I didn't
some
pick one, but
war.
definitely, yeah. I think they may have done some romance, but I don't think...
I think it was short-lived.
Yeah. Yeah, Modern Love.
Okay. Is there any modern
one
love
of the
in
titles.
There?
I don't know if there's any in... It'd be hard to tell if there's any in the collection based on the way it's organized, but there is an EC archive of Modern Love. But yeah, it's... They're not typically associated with romance, I don't think, because Modern Love is there's looks like they're just one volume. Yeah, I don't think they did a lot of it.
I'm wondering if that was one of the ones that they kind of tried to launch after all of their horror stuff got.
I don't think so because of the dates of it.
Maybe not.
49 and 50.
Well, that's definitely after the isn't that after the hearings or no?
I thought the hearings were after 1950.
Oh, you know what? I think you're right. Never mind. Yes, I'm sure you're right. But yeah, I see that you can actually get the hardcover on that. That's something that might interest me.
I didn't find the best of EC Comics in our database, did you?
No.
Yeah, I couldn't.
I was
find
looking
it.
For it too.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, it's called Choke Gas.
Yeah, I looked under that too.
I actually remember that coming out, but yeah, it's not showing up in the database at all.
Yeah, I looked under Choke and Gasp. I got nothing.
Nope. So, did you get this from the library, Chris?
Yeah, this is a Hoopla read.
Nice. Mike, do you want to go next? Do you want me to?
I can go next. I'm still in the 90s, but this is a book that I didn't know existed. And until recently, but I've been trying to get all of like the Jim Valentino and all the different books, and this one has everybody in it, and it's called Altered Image, and this is like a crossover with many different characters in it, specifically Majestic, who comes from Jim Lee's shop, the Max, which is Sam Keith. Savage Dragon, Larson, Shadowhawk is Valentino's own. Spawn is McFarlane, and Witchblade is Silvestri. So it has a little bit of everything. There's no McFarlane in it. It says based on the Justice League of America number 5, written by Mike Signoski and Bernard Sox. I don't know if I've read that. But this is like one day they wake up and there's... reality just looks really weird. There's a huge splash page. Well, the creative team is Jim Valentino. He's the writer, artist, and he did the logo design. The logo isn't that great. It looks kind of crazy. Andrew Peepoy, my guy, did inks on 1, 4 through 13 and page 15. Alp Antler did the remaining inks, and then there was the finished art pages on that splash page, which is really impressive, by Brad W. Foster. It's a two-page splash scene with castles and like flying cars and all kinds of stuff. It really looks hyper detailed, and it has to be the inker. It just has to be, I think, because it just looks out of place in this book of how much detail it has in it. But the other interesting thing in this story is usually at the bottom they'll say, like, Savage Dragon, copyright, Eric Larson, Spawn, Todd McFarlane, blah, blah, blah. You don't see none of that, so I thought that was fascinating. And it assumes that you've never read any of the others because at the beginning it gives a bunch of faces and it says these are who the characters are. So they wake up and the world just looks really altered and weird. And it seems like they do it from the Max's perspective, which I think is great because he's already twisted. And you don't know what's reality or what's in the outback, or you never know what's real or what's not. And if you've never experienced the Max, I highly recommend it. Even if you just watch it on DVD or Blu-ray and you watch the Max MTV, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty phenomenal. Valentino does draw a great Max. I don't know how he's channeling Keith, but he draws a really good Max. And I think those are the Peepoy inks, so props to Peepoy on inking the Max. But he it's sort of like the gathering of teams. He runs into Majestic and he tells him what's going on, and as soon as they touch, he remembers who he is. And they're going from place to place. The next person they run into is Spawn, and they join him, and then Savage Dragon's working in like a TV repair shop. You don't see too many of those anymore. I think people don't repair their TVs. I think they just buy a new one.
I mean, even like I remember our printer, like our computer printer
Yeah.
stopped, and I went to like ask people, like, how do you fix it or whatever. Like, nobody fixes them anymore. You buy a new one.
Yeah, that's kind of what. Printers are sort of cheap, even though we've had I have problems with printers because I don't print a lot, and the ink dries up, and then it you try to do the cleaning process, and sometimes you struggle with it, and it like, should I just get a new printer? Like, I was stubborn yesterday, and I got our printer to work because I needed to print out some forms, but I was able to do that. I had to put
Everything's
a
like
new
disposable
cartridge
now.
in, and the other cartridge wasn't even like barely touched. But
Right, it was just
I think
dried
it
out.
just dried out, yeah. And usually I want to print everything in black and white anyway, so yeah. In the Epson one, it's like you can go black and white for a while, but then if you run out of the color, it starts complaining. And I hate that. I
I
just
know.
want to be black and white. That's all I
I've
want.
got an Epson as well.
We have a HP, and my pet peeve with printers is getting one that just feeds the paper properly and doesn't constantly screw up. And I get so frustrated with them. And it's the same thing. We don't use it very often, but we use it enough that to not have one would be an
Problem.
inconvenience. So, but yeah,
All I have to
it
do is
definitely
like make
is.
it a point to print out something like every third day, even if it's just a page of the same shit, just so I don't have to drop another $30 on a cartridge or whatever they run. I can't remember what they run, but they're expensive. That's how they make their money, is on the cartridges.
Oh, big
You
time.
got
But
just oh yeah, definitely.
with the kids, now that the kids are a little older, I'm finding that our ink is not drying out because they'll print stuff, they'll
For
print,
school, yeah.
or like they'll even just print like a picture of something that's just black and white that they can color stuff. So they're using it enough now, whereas before, Mike, I used to have the same problem. Very, I'd only have to print once in a blue moon, and then suddenly I'm trying to clean the cartridge like three or four times, and it's still not working.
Yeah, I finally got mine yesterday, but that's kind of funny that Savage Dragon's working at a TV repair shop, and then we got into printers. But there you go. And every time that they run into a new character, they end up fighting with them because they're in this altered world and they don't know what's going on. So Savage Dragon throws down with them, and then they're like, "We gotta follow. This is Max's show. He's leading us today." And it's like, how can you follow the Max, man? That guy's like, I don't even know if he has any abilities other than he mopes around all the time. But he just cracks me up. And then this version of Shadowhawk is at the police station, and he's sort of like a vigilante working for the police. And this is the younger kid, but they originally, this is Eddie Collins' Shadow Hawk. They go to recruit him, and as soon as Spawn touches him, he remembers everything. And then they say, we gotta go to Washington, D.C. And in Washington, D.C., they meet up with all of the characters from Eric Larson's run, like Super Patriot and Freak Force and everybody, and they sort of recruit them. And then there's a splash page when they grab a Witchblade, and it's an interesting Witchblade splash panel because I don't know who's inking this page. I hate when I have to count the pages to find out who inked it. But it really is an interesting rendition of Witchblade. And they sort of join forces, and then they hit a portal as they don't even know who they're attacking, but Max is leading them on this mission. And they hit a portal, and they sort of it turns into what was that DC Marvel, was it the Amalgam? They sort of turn into amalgams of themselves, like Max is merged with the Dragon, and Shadowhawk and Spawn are merged, and Witchblade and Majestic are merged. So it's like really weird. They hit that portal and they turn into amalgamations of two different characters. But it was a lot of fun. This is a 3-issue mini series. I haven't been able to track down number 3. And I have it on my want list, and it just never ever shows up. But I'll probably read number 2 just because I have access to it right away. And but it was highly entertaining, especially when I get to see the Max leading a bunch of superheroes. Max really cracks me up. He really does. He's like a depressive, mopey hero that I've never even like seen him like use his powers in full. He's usually f fighting imaginary beasts in the outback that you don't even know if they exist or not. Other than that, he's like a homeless guy carrying around a cart. So it's like, what an interesting creation. I when he first came out, I hated it. Like I absolutely thought the Mac. I was like, what is this? This is just so weird. And I didn't like Sam Keith. He was drawing like in Marvel Comics Presents a Wolverine that had like hair that was like 2 feet high and these curls. It would curl around, and I was like, it would drive me nuts. And it's so weird that over time, decades later, he's become one of my favorite artists, and the Max has become like one of my favorite things to explore. So yeah, it's strange how a lot of artists that I found I couldn't read their stuff back then because I was so much into like realism of comics and how my tastes have changed over the years, so I don't have it doesn't have to look realistic. Matter, I prefer it doesn't. That's why I
And you
like
can appreciate the differences in styles now. Like before, I think when we were younger, you would see some of this and be like, this person can't draw. They don't know how to draw. But now it's like, no, they can draw fine. They're using a certain style and interpretation and stuff, and it's like, I was the same way, Mike. Like, I didn't mind his style, but like initially, I bought like the first couple issues and I dropped it because I had no idea what the hell was going on in the story. And now it's like that stuff is fascinating to me, but
And
at
I
the
think
time,
he
I was too young for
draws
it.
like gorgeous women. Like they're not all skinny and like modelist. They like they have meat on the bone, and they're just beautifully shaped. And like I like Julie's gorgeous. Like I think she's amazingly drawn, and I've just been liking his style a lot. But now I find even the story is like I just find him really compelling as a character, 'cause I still don't know what's reality with him. Like he's just one of those characters that I might never ever figure out, but The journey is a hell of a lot of fun. It just
Yeah.
it makes me laugh and it makes me smile, and that's sometimes what you need in life is just a comic to just sit back and enjoy and not necessarily understand. Like me and you were talking about vinyl, I think on the Facebook or something, and you said you didn't. It is highly entertaining, but I don't know what the hell is going on. Like I but I'm like I'm turning each page like I want to know. I don't totally get it, but it's fascinating to me. It's like a serial killer thing, but yeah, I
Yeah,
just love.
it's good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. It's a very entertaining. But that's what I brought to the some Altered Image.
How great. I would love to have a Sam Keith like sketch. I don't, you know, that would be fantastic because
Yeah, and
like
as I'm.
him and Sienkiewicz and stuff like that, they're so distinctive and it's just that's what, you know, I'm kind of looking for now with some a new take on stuff, which is real, or I shouldn't say new, but very different take. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm reading a lot of his stuff too in Marvel Comics Presents because I'm trying to complete that run. And so I'm running across a lot of Keith and a lot of his covers, and God, they're amazing. Like I used to I couldn't stand them back then. I found it very I unapproachable. It's like the other artist that I had trouble with, and he's a big name, but is Keith Giffen. Like if I tried to read a Trencher or some of his like abstract looking Legion, like it was tough for me back then, but now I absolutely adore it. Like it just attracts my eye to it. So yeah, my tastes have changed quite a bit. The one I haven't been able to latch on to is Mignola still. I found him, his Cosmic Odyssey and Hellboy very, I don't know, the line is too straight, or I don't know what it is, but I still haven't latched on to his style yet. But
Maybe someday.
maybe a decade from now I'll be on this show and talking about Mignola.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right. Well, my first one that I have is trying to get back. Work's been so crazy. We launched a new system, and it's been, you know, like anything else, a learning process. And it's like I haven't had a second to myself, just working extra hours and everything else. That I haven't been able to read some. I keep going with my Captain Americas, but I did read one today, and it's Captain America 169, which features the return of the not very famous villain, the Tumbler. Basically, a poor man's
Leaper.
Yes, exactly. He
That's
appeared.
really saying something.
Yeah. And you know what? I think it's because when I was a very, very young, I remember I had a coloring book of Captain America, and Batroc was in there. But I've always been very, very fond of Batroc, even though he's so cheesy. I really, really like him. But Tumbler, I really don't have, you know, any thoughts on him. He did appear in one of the Tales of Suspense issues, and now he's making a return appearance here in Captain America 169. This one is by Steve Englehart and Mike Friedrich, and Sal Buscema does the art. I love Sal Buscema. This one starts with the Falcon just kind of thinking to himself, and he's kind of he's a little bit frustrated because a while back in the series, Captain America was given another injection and now has moderate super strength. He's like not like even close to Spider-Man, but he has super strength. It's not just peak strength. So Falcon kind of feels like almost like an add-on that is not really needed that often. But anyhow, he's walking down the street at night, and a car starts revving up and actually tries to run him down. He manages to move out of the way enough to not get run over, but he is hit, and he kind of falls over. Everyone gets out of the car, seeing that he's not dead, and they all start attacking him, and he starts attacking back. He's getting beat up pretty badly at this point. It turns out that these hoods are from a local gang boss named Mr. Morgan, who had approached, kind of been off and on with Falcon, like kind of giving him tips, but also not a good guy at all. And Falcon always had bigger fish to fry at the time, but, always would warn Morgan that, one of these days he's going to take him down too. Finally, Morgan, actually approached him and said, you should come work for me. And obviously Falcon was not going to do that. So, anyhow, Mr. Morgan has sent these guys to take Falcon out, because if he's not going to work for him, he doesn't want him around. So like I said, he's getting beat up pretty badly when Steve Rogers he's staying with Falcon at this point, because he doesn't have a place of his own. And he walks out and he sees Falcon getting beat up. So he runs back inside, changes to Captain America, jumps up on the roof and jumps down into the fray and starts beating them up. And Falcon is, he's appreciative of the help. But again, this kind of rubs him the wrong way, because he's like, they were beating, they were coming after me. But as soon as you showed up, they turned tail and ran. And Cap tries to tell him, well, that's because there's two of them fighting instead of just Falcon alone. And Falcon knows that that's not true. He's basically doesn't have power compared to Captain America. And he needs to do something. If he's going to stay his partner, he's got to do something to kind of level his game. So Cap, says, I really don't think that you need it. We're absolutely a fine team as it is, but how would you do it? Even if you tried, where are you going to get extra powers? So, Falcon's hoping maybe somebody in the Avengers could help. And Cap suggests maybe Hank Pym or Tony Stark. And Falcon says no. He's like, I actually have somebody in mind. And he talks about Black Panther and all the scientific knowledge that they have in Wakanda. So Cap says that he's going to give Panther a call to contact Falcon. So that takes care of that. And they part both happy. And as Captain America's driving down the road and on his motorcycle, he happens to see an ad on TV that is portraying Captain America basically as a quote, one-man vigilante committee. And he's just basically anyone that he feels is a criminal, he's, attacking, whether it was obviously somebody bad like the Red Skull or just private citizens, doesn't make a difference. Captain America just takes, the law into his own hands and does whatever he wants to do. He's not even welcome at S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore. Cap and Fury had a kind of a falling out, and it is true that Cap can't come and go in S.H.I.E.L.D. like he always used to. it ends the ad saying that it's paid for by the committee to regain America's principles. So he's like, what is this nonsense? He's like, none of this is true. And this isn't the first time that somebody told him that there were being ads run about that seemed to be trying to turn the public against him. So he's like, this is crazy. So he's talking to himself this whole time in front of the TV at the shop, in the store, window shopping. And, he turns around and all this crowd is like around him as they were listening to him talk to himself. And he tries to pitch to the crowd that, he's just here for America and so on and so forth. And they all look very scared of him and, just say, oh yeah, okay, whatever you say. And so he takes off. The next morning, a flying saucer lands and Black Panther gets out, and he's there to greet Falcon, and Falcon and his girlfriend go with Panther, and they're going to go back to Wakanda to try to figure something out for Falcon. So now that Falcon's on his way, Cap decides he's going to go to this committee headquarters to figure out what's going on with these advertisements. So he finds out which advertising agency was running this. He goes to the office, goes right past the secretary and walks right in, and starts talking to the guy behind the desk. And it turns out this guy is actually the one even narrating the whole thing, because he's actually in charge of this committee. And he says he firmly believes that everything that he's said. And then he says, "Well, listen, if you want to change my opinion, then why don't you do a boxing match for charity?" And he's like, "I'm tied to an exhibition coming up. Why don't you join that?" And Captain America's like, "I've done hundreds of those, but if one more is going to change your mind, then fine." So Cap turns around and leaves, and the guy picks up the phone and says, there's the plan is in motion." So anyhow, Captain America goes ahead and leaves the that office, starts to turn to walk, and he hears a help from a local liquor store, and a guy is knocked out on the floor, and he sees a thief running through into the back. He chases him and sees that it's the Tumbler. And again, we haven't seen him since Tales of Suspense number 83. And Tumbler's thinking to himself, he's like, "Oh my God!" He's like, "I wonder why and he's just saying whoever his boss is, why the boss involved me in this. It's like he's not going to even get as much money as what my fee is by robbing this liquor store. And but he wants to discredit Captain America, and I'm for that, so that's fine. Captain America throws his shield at Tumbler. He ducks, and they go at it. They start fighting. Now Tumbler's a little bit out of practice. He hasn't had any jobs in a while, and Captain America starts knocking him around. He actually gives him a pretty good punch into the stomach, and he's like, "All right, well, I think he's had it now." So he's about to turn around to call the police, where Tumbler actually does get up, and he charges him hard. And Captain America turns around to put his shield up, and that was Tumbler's plan. He actually jumps on the shield and uses it as kind of like a springboard to get up over on top of a rooftop, and ends up getting away. So he's like, "Well, I'm going to have to track down this guy before he gets too far." So he's looking all over the place, can't find him. There's a brief interlude where he talks to Sharon Carter. There's a subplot going on that Peggy Carter has come back. She had amnesia for about 20 years or so, and now she's back, and she's still in love with Cap, and Cap doesn't know that he, or I mean, Peggy doesn't know that he that Cap and Sharon are together now. And in this iteration, Sharon and Peggy are actually sisters. Peggy's the older sister. And so now he knows he's going to end up having to break the news to Peggy eventually. So the next day is the exhibition for the boxing match. And he comes walking in, and he's like, "All right." All the kids come around him and want his autograph and stuff, and people, adults are around him, are like, is that, the type of person that the kids should be really hero worshiping, because they're seeing all these ads. And just for the benefit of our listeners, this is also a long going subplot where the Serpent Society, and specifically the Viper, used to be an ad guy, and he's hired this ad agency to actually discredit Captain America this way because he hasn't had very much success beating him physically. But anyhow, so Captain America gets to that campaign, advertising guy, and it's for the exhibition, and he's like, "Oh, here's your partner, John Robert Keane." And Captain America goes, "What? I know him. You were booked when I first captured you. It is of course the Tumbler." So Tumbler's in his civilian outfit, and he's like, "We're not boxing. He's like, you just robbed a liquor store, and the man is injured because of you. So you know he's going to capture him right on the fly." So Tumbler turns around and runs because he's like, "Wait a minute, what's going on? I'm not sticking around for this. I don't know what the boss is talking about, but I'm not sticking around for this." So Cap throws his shield at him, knocks him, actually just gives him like a regular punch down. Oh no, I'm sorry. He grabs his leg and just before he gets away and grabs him and throws him to the ground. Suddenly the Tumbler screams out, "Ah!" And he's like, "What's going on?" And Captain America says, "What's going on? Are you trying to act your way out of this?" And he chucks him, and the Tumbler is dead. He's totally dead. You see the ad agency guy thinking to himself, he's like, "Ah, just as it planned, that sucker didn't know he was set up all along." And so now in front of this huge crowd, people have now seen Captain America supposedly grab somebody and throw him down, which has killed him. So that's the end of this issue. And it looks like there's going to be further further plans to continue to discredit him nationally in order to do away with Captain America once and for all. So this was a good one. I'm hoping to get a chance at lunchtime tomorrow to read a couple more, so I want to get back into my Captain America reading. I always love all the subplots that go on and stuff in these, like, Bronze Age books.
Cool. That's a good time for comics, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So for my other thing, I'm gonna do like a lightning round of some movies. Karen and I have been kind of on a kick where we've been watching a old movie, mostly film noir, or some film noir, I guess. But the first one is not. We watched this Arsenic and Old Lace.
Oh, I love that movie.
Unintentionally, the three of the four movies that we've watched are from 1944. We didn't do that intentionally, but just kind of happened, Chris, that way. But
tell the truth, you're watching every movie ever made, and you're up to 1944.
Yeah. that is not far off from something that I would do or attempt to do. Yeah, so we, this technically was our Halloween movie. It's not at all a horror movie. It is a black comedy. It does take place on Halloween. So that was the connection. It's from 1944, like I said, directed by Frank Capra. Cary Grant would be the, biggest name, in it, Peter Lorre, who folks may know from Maltese Falcon, Casablanca. He was a Hungarian actor that kind of was typecast as, you know, a creepy guy, murderer, that kind of thing. And it's based on a play, which, speaking of actors who played monsters and whatnot, it had Boris Karloff in it. And part of the plot with that character is that he looks like Boris Karloff, the character in the play. And many of the actors in the film, not Cary Grant, but many of the actors in the film were from the play, but they wouldn't release Boris Karloff. So a different actor takes his place. But yeah, it's about a young man, Mortimer Brewster, played by Cary Grant, is originally intended for Bob Hope. They also looked at Jack Benny, and finally cast Cary Grant. It's a different kind of role for him. It's a very broad, you know, comedy of that day was very broad. So his reactions to stuff are very broad and very exaggerated expressions and stuff like that. Almost reminds you of Jerry Lewis at times. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing was that he goes home to see his two aunts who are older and finds out that they are poisoning old men. they see it as a mercy, you know, they have a sign out front of their mansion that says, you know, room for rent, but that's just how they lure in old bachelors, who they, you know, and then they give them some wine, and it's laced with poison, arsenic, and then they bury them in the basement, with the help of their, I think, is it their son or their other nephew, who believes that he is Teddy Roosevelt?
Oh yes, I don't remember what the relation exactly is, but yes, now I remember that.
Yeah, it's one of Mortimer Cary Grant's brothers. They've got a third brother. And that's the one that who has gone under plastic surgery enough times that he looks like Boris, apparently looks like Boris Karloff. And he comes with his doctor who's done the plastic surgery. That's the one that's played by Peter Lorre. They have a man that they've killed and seek to bury in the basement. And they happen upon what's going on. And so it's very goofy, very silly. But the premise is amusing, of these old women murdering old men with elderberry wine. And it's real crazy. Definitely does not have a modern view of mental illness. would not play well in terms of how mental illness is treated in the film these days. But it was definitely a different kind of Halloween movie for us to watch.
I saw that a few years ago, and I really, really enjoy it. It's just, like you said, silly, over the top. But those two ants, oh my God, they just crack me up.
Was it yeah, in one of your books, funny. Rob?
Huh?
Was it in one of your... No.
No, I don't know how we ended up stumbling upon it. But yeah, I saw it quite a few years ago now, at least 10, if not more than that, maybe even 20 years ago. And yeah, it's just came across it, and oh my God, just thought it was just very, very entertaining.
What did you watch it on, Chris?
So all of the stuff that we watched was on DVD or Blu-ray from the library. Physical medium, like.
There you go.
Two of the films I said were film noir, the other two that were from 1944. We watched Laura, directed by Otto Preminger, and starring Gene Tierney in the title role of Laura. Also has Vincent Price. A fairly young, let's see, it was 1944. He was born 19, so 33-year-old Vincent Price, in a role that was not like horror or creepy or anything like that. It was interesting seeing him in something different. Really, really good. The American Film Institute has called it one of the 10 best mystery films of all time. really good story about NYPD detective investigating the murder of a young woman named Laura Hunt, played by Jean Tierney, interviewing men that she knew, a newspaper columnist, an older man named Waldo Lidecker, who had been kind of her, used his connection to advance Laura's career. She was an advertising agent. And then Vincent Price plays Shelby Carpenter, who is a was her fiance. So he investigates her death, and there's a big twist. Probably doesn't hit as hard as it did in 1944, just after, you know, 70 more years of movies. I understand it was a real shock at the time. Still a good twist and a good film, and Jean Tierney was just a really beautiful woman. Was good casting, because Laura needs to have the gravity of that men would be really drawn to her. Also, you know, she's a woman with a career, and she conveys that intelligence as well. So it was really good casting, I thought. We also watched Double Indemnity, which is the first of two that I had seen before, but not in over a decade or so.
What is that one called?
Double Indemnity.
Oh, okay.
I've seen that one as well more recently, like in the past 5 years or so.
Yeah. For the first time. This is like a quintessential film noir, like with the like dark scenes and using, you know, it's Billy Wilder, based on a book by crime novel by James M. Cain. The screenplay was co-written by Raymond Chandler, the detective writer. About a insurance salesman named Walter Neff, played by Fred McMurray, who meets a woman played by Barbara Stanwyck, who ropes him into a plot to insure her husband with accident insurance and then murder him and collect on a double indemnity clause that pays double for accidental death. So definitely, just when it comes to like a film noir, this like kind of checks all the boxes, kind of. Definitely, like, if you know, it's the kind of story that you'd come across in like the hard case kind of crime novels and stuff. It was good seeing it again. The last one, I had also seen before, but again, like, not in over a decade or more. And this one's from 1950. Not a film noir, All About Eve, by Joseph Mankiewicz, starring Betty Davis and Anne Baxter as Eve. This is like a real famous film, on a lot of best greatest films of all time. One of the like really good early movies about actually about movie making and showbiz. It's like, if you look on Wikipedia and like the references to it and later popular culture, everything from, you know, The Simpsons to Gossip Girl to Gilligan's Island have made references to this film, but it's about Eve Harrington, who is played by Ann Baxter, and it's all about how she shows up and ingratiates herself to Margot Channing, who's played by Betty Davis, who's just turned 40 and is concerned about her advancing age and how that'll affect her career. Mostly on stage, it's you know, it connects to Hollywood and film, but it's mostly connecting to Broadway and on stage, and how Eve is not quite what she presents herself to be initially, and how she slowly worms her way into Margot's life and uses her to advance her own career, and just how ruthless she turns out to be in seeking her own fame, and the sort of cyclical nature of this whole process, and just in how age, particularly for female actresses, even to this day, is still a factor. Really interesting. Has a young and at that time pretty much unknown Marilyn Monroe in a small role. Interesting seeing her pop up. Was notable also for which was a record 14 Academy Award nominations, and won 6 of them, including Best Picture. And it's the only film in Oscar history to receive 4 female acting nominations.
Oh, wow.
Davis and Baxter were both nominated for Best Actress, and then there was 2 Best Supporting Actress nominations as well. So yeah, it was really good. Kind of like, there's another film called Sunset Boulevard that is kind of from around the same period that is very different, but actually also 1950. it definitely is a different tone, but it's, I don't know if it was like the 1950s around the time like Hollywood is starting to take a look back at itself, but the thing that connects the two in my mind is that it is they're really, really good films that sort of comment on the life of Hollywood and Broadway, and whereas Sunset Boulevard also was nominated for a lot of Academy Awards, 11 in this case, but that deals with a former silent film star who gets a screenwriter into trying to help her make a comeback. So I'd recommend that too. But yeah, All About Eve is really good. And that's the last of the 4 I was going to talk about. But yeah,
they remade that recently.
Which one?
All About Eve.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You watched some good ones. I've seen half of those. I got to watch the other 2.
2019. Lily James, Gillian Anderson. Interesting. Was it a film? Was it a film or just a?
I think it was a play. Film. I thought it was a film. I saw a preview of it. Whether it was a thing for a play or not, I don't know.
Okay, it was a screening of a stage adaptation of the film.
Ah.
interesting because it's like I said, the film deals with Broadway stars, so it's interesting they then adapted the film into a play. But yeah, so Lily James plays Eve Harrington, and Gillian Anderson plays Margot Channing. I like Gillian Anderson. That's interesting. It'll be interesting to see.
Cool beans.
That's cool. I'm gonna have to check those other ones out, Chris.
Well, I'm gonna
Yeah, I
take
would
you.
recommend them.
I'm gonna take you back into the 90s. So we're gonna go
Okay.
from the we're gonna jump from the 40s and 50s back into the 90s.
Let's go to the 90s.
Yeah.
Let's jump in our phone booth
That's right.
and
This is a Rob Liefeld creation, and it's called Maxim Age. The script is by Eric Stevenson, and the penciler is Fabio Laguna, and inks by Norm Rapman and Jonathan Sabal. And this opens up on Easter Island, and there's a director there trying to film a shot, and he's getting really pissed off because it's raining continuously, and he's taking that out on his actors. But there's a huge boom, and the ground starts shaking. And one of the rocks releases what looks to be a human, but it's sort of like a Doctor Strange type character called the Ancient. And as soon as he awakens, the director's like, "Let's talk. What's going on?" And he wants to know more about him, but he's like, "I must go there." And he points to a guy's jacket, and it says, "Planet Hollywood." So he takes his way off to Hollywood. I don't know why he feels he has to go there, but and we don't know. And we meet a young girl there, and she's asking for change at a bar, $20, and she wants it broken up. But she hands him a tw what you think is a 20, but it's really a 10. And he gives her $20 in change, and she takes off running, and she's all happy because she made $10. And she goes to her friends, and they're like, "Hey, look, I scammed this guy off of $10." And she gets slapped by the leader, and he's like, "I thought I told you 40. Pow!" So it's kind of like a weird Oliver Twist gang type going on here. And as she's hit to the ground, she's left there in the alley, and that ancient one shows up, and he says, "Show yourself now." And he like grants her this power, so she becomes Maxim Age, and she's the protector of Earth. And he tells her about these aliens called the Keep, where she has to protect Earth from the aliens that are invading the Keep. And you can tell where Rob sort of gets these ideas from. This is like the Eternals, Celestials, what was the other one? Inhumans type thing, where an entity comes, these alien race comes to Earth to advance the population, and then give them powers with this thing called the New Gene. And I think this relates to the New Men comic book that gets released as a series, and gives them powers, and then they enslave the people with powers, and then they go off into space again. So the concept is kind of like coming from an Eternals and humans type relationship, the humans and humans with the Kree, and the Eternals with the Celestials. But it works really well, and it leads right into the second issue, which is an Extreme Destroyer crossover. And it doesn't really give you a breakdown of all the different books that are involved, but I think there was an Extreme Destroyer series, and then there's probably like a prelude and a bookend to it, and then it crosses over into Newman and a couple other things. Made crossover to Youngblood, I don't remember. But they do a good job. This one's by Rob Liefeld, Eric Stevenson on the story. The script is done by William Messner Loebs, and the pencils by Fabio Laguna with Norm Ratman inks. And it gives you the story. It says, in a single day and night, the Keep have secured a complete control over the Earth and begun to gather many of its heroes, including members of the Newmen and Youngblood. The remaining heroes have to gather together to sort of stop the force, plus this entity called the Shepherd. For me, the Shepherd is kind of like equivalent to the Silver Surfer. He's going there for the Keep, and he's helping them invade it. And then it talks about the falling of Kid Supreme. So there was a book called Kid Supreme, so it might have tied into that book as well. And it introduces all the characters, which is a lot of characters that I recognize from Youngblood, and a lot of ones that I don't recognize. So I recognize the Youngblood characters, and I recognize the Troll and Nightsaber and Bogan, but then there's a lot of other ones that I don't recognize. There's this a series called Blood Pool, and there's a couple of characters from there. Rubble, and I think Fusion and Wilder were a member of Blood Pool. And she shows up underneath the Pentagon, Maximage, because she can mysteriously port herself into the room. And she ports herself, and she tells them she doesn't know what she's doing yet. She's like, "Why did this sorcerer just like drop me in the middle of the Earth getting invaded and tell me that I'm the protector of the Earth, and now I have to deal with all these characters that I know?" Because Youngblood was very commercialized. They were in commercials, they were in toys, they were stuff. So she mentions that, and she's able to read all their minds and also scope their powers, so she knows how to deal with them. And she runs across Supreme, and Supreme is a woman in this. And I don't remember Supreme turning into a woman, or if she's the Supreme of the future. It sounds like she might be like the Legion of Superheroes version of the Supreme. She's wearing virtually nothing on the back end. All I see is ass. That if there's a thong, it must be so far up the butt that I can't even see it from this angle that thong exists. But she says, "Yeah, I know who you are. There's been a Maximage of every era, and it used to be in the past, and now you're in the present." And so she kind of vouches for Maximage, and they sort of says, "We gotta act now. The Keep is invading now." And then the scene cuts to a short where the Ancient One confronts Kid Supreme, but it's just like a 2-page entry. And then there's this Fabio-looking character I've never seen before, who's scaling a mountain, who's looking for like this body of water that's supposed to grant him knowledge and power. And he runs across a ship that's crashed into the ground, and combat is being held in the Pentagon against his will. And he finds out he has a clone that's been acting as him in Youngblood, and the new government agent in chief frees him because he's like, "No, combat, you're part of the team, and we just sent the clone into space." And so he freed him, and that's when the Silver Surfer type character fights with Maximage, which looks like she's got like these energy bolts that like has to charge up, and she fires them at him like twice. But he still ends up taking her out, and she like ports herself away. She actually gets blasted and then has to port away. And then that deity is going to attack the Youngblood headquarters. But there was like a lot of action in this. This came polybagged. It came with a card. It looks like a gaming card. It says exclusive collectible gaining card. And it says Maximage. She's 6'4", really tall. 160 pounds. That's pretty light for 6'4". Powers. It says Mystic Energy Blast, which we saw in the comic books. But then you look at her powers. It says Strength 8. That's maybe 8 out of 10. It doesn't give you a scale here. Agility 8, energy 0, which it sounds to me that's weird because energy, her powers are mystic energy blasts, but she has 0 capability in energy, which
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't understand that. Combat 8. So I don't think they put a lot of thought into making the character look like what they appear in the comic books, because I would have think the combat skills, because she's brand new, would be near 0. I think her energy would be near 8, and her agility would be really low, and her strength might be high, but we haven't seen her like use sheer strength yet. So yeah, I found that card to be pretty interesting.
Maybe it's energy as in like desire to get out of bed in the morning.
Mine is 0. Mine is 0. I can tell you that. Especially on weekdays.
I think all of mine would be 0 on a weekday when getting out of bed. I'd have a 0 strength, 0 agility, 0 energy, and 0 combat. So on Fridays, my energy increases.
Yeah, mine does too.
But yeah, it was fun, and these two issues, I'll probably read the rest of it. I really would like to finish the mini series, but trying to find all the crossovers and stuff across many different long boxes would be highly difficult. I probably have them all because I know I have the Newman, Extreme Destroyer, and some of the others, but I don't. It doesn't even tell you the tie-ins. I don't have all the Lady Supremes, but I do have all the Kid Supremes. So if that ties in, I might have a full run of the tie-ins. I think the next Maxim Age is part of the event, so I might get like chapter 5 or something of the event. But yeah, I like this one a lot more than I thought I would. And this penciler is pretty interesting, and I've never seen like Rob or anybody mention him on the podcast, but he does have an art style that's very derivative of Rob's style. And then of course he's inked by Norm Ratman, so you get that old Image Extreme style for sure. That's all I got.
I've got another one.
All right.
Yeah. It's the agony and ecstasy of young love. Young
Wow.
love number 118.
Young Love number
118.
118. That's
And
DC, right?
it's DC. The cover has this man embracing the maid. And she says, "Please, John, don't love me if you don't mean it. You'll break my heart." The lady's peering from outside into the kitchen, saying, "John's having sport with a housemaid again. He never stops." So, the first one is called "It Wasn't His First," and it's narrated by the young lady who talks about how they met at a skating rink, falling into each other, ice skating rink, and they started dating, and she totally fell in love, and as they start to get to know each other, start asking more questions, and she says, you never really you never really talk about any other girls that you went with before." And he said, "Yeah, there was one or two, but you're my girl now." And one day they go, they're over at his house, and they go into his bedroom, and it's a mess compared to the rest of the house, of course, typical of a teenager. And he's got his dresser drawers open and stuff, and she goes to close it for him, and there's a picture of a blonde-haired girl, and she says, "Who's this?" And he said, "Oh, that's Vicky. I don't know why I kept the picture." And she says, "Well, what does she mean to you?" says, nothing. We used to go together, but that's all over. And he throws it in the garbage. And she said, well, you didn't have to do that. And he embraces her and kisses and says, there's only one girl in my life and you shouldn't doubt it. And she says, I want to believe you, Mort. And she keeps thinking about this Vicky and starts asking more and more questions as time goes on. And he's getting a little bit annoyed because they're out for a stroll in the moonlight. And, you know, why do you keep bringing this up over and over again? I haven't seen her in years. And she wants to know more about her and just says we grew up together and thought that we were in love, and but it weren't. We weren't. And she wants to know if she was prettier than she is. And he says, she was beautiful. You're beautiful. Forget it. And so she starts getting very defensive and says, you did love her. Maybe you still do. And so he says, all right, I loved her. I still do. Is that what you wanted to hear? And so she goes around, she runs away crying. And he said, I didn't mean it, Gail. It isn't true. And so he chases after her and holds her and says, you know, I love you. And Vicky's in the past. And, you know, they embrace and kiss. And there's just the thought bubble of her just with Vicky's face in it. So she's still thinking about Vicky. So at school, she starts asking all of his friends, all of Mort's friends about Vicky and why, you know, how long were they together? Why did they break up, et cetera, et cetera. And finally, she tracks down where Vicky lives and she starts spying on her. And then the next day, she starts, you know, she starts blazing in with more questions and stuff. And he says, listen, I've heard you're all over the school asking questions about Vicky and me. And she's like, yeah, I think you still love her. And that's why you're really angry. And he says, he denies it again and gets very upset. But, you know, she goes and starts spying some more. And she sees Vicky come out of out of Mort's house. And so then she starts accusing Mort of getting together. And she's like, are you kidding? And he says, you kidding me? Don't be a fool. She came over because you've been spying on her. Why do you have to wreck her happiness? And she says, her happiness? He says, that's right. You stirred up a lot of rumors about Vicky and me, and now and her boyfriend didn't even know about the two of us, and now he's jealous. And so finally, the girl has realized what a fool she's been and says, can you ever forgive me? And Mort says, on one condition, believe that I love you and only you. And she says, I do believe, my darling. And that's the end of that one.
What
the next
mess.
One. What's that?
What a mess.
I know. Foolish. This foolish young woman, you know, sabotaging her own relationship. The next one is this young lady. She's and it's called Girls. Would you buy a used car from this man? So she's looking around. She saved up $500 and she wants a used car. So she's looking around and a salesperson named Jeff comes up and says, oh, do you like this one? I can't afford that one. And he's like, well, the cheaper car is in the back of the lot. She says, well, my name is Julie and his name is Jeff. And so trying different cars and they get into this one jalopy and she says, oh, I think this car will do. How much is it? And he whispers to her, don't buy this one. It's a disaster. She's like, well, which one? He's like, is the boss looking? She says, nobody's here. He goes, don't buy any of these lemons. Go across the street to Square Deal Malloy's. He's got a good red compact there. It was owned by a little young school teacher. So she gives him a kiss on the cheek and goes across the street and looks at the red compact, but it's a It's a stick shift, and she doesn't know how to drive them. And so the older
Next
man,
time you're looking for a vehicle, Rob, you should go to that place. That guy's honest.
Square Deal Malloy. Yeah. And so she's like, "Well, I don't know how to drive a stick shift." What's it? What, Chris?
Right in his name.
That's right. So he calls out. He says, "My son will teach you." He's like, "Jeff, Jeff." So Jeff walked from across the street, and Julie gets mad. It's like, I thought you were helping me because you like me, but you're just trying to make a sale for your father. I said, no, Jeff says, this is the best car for you. And so she's very, very upset. It's like, I do like you. And she says, I can't trust you. So,
you gave me a stick shift. I can't
right.
trust you.
And
don't trust anybody with the stick shift. Right.
So the father is like, hey, you know, enough gabbing. We're here to sell cars. Get back to work, Jeff. So she goes, don't tell me you really work there. He's like, yeah. He's like, my dad owns both lots. And so then she realizes what a fool she's been. He wasn't trying to get one deal over the other because dad owns both lots. And he really thought the Compact was the good car for her. So now, years later, they still laugh about it. You see the last scene, that driving away in the stick shift. And of course, they trust and love each other. So that was the end of that one. I didn't think that.
How did she learn to drive the stick shift?
Jeff showed her. He showed her what to do with that stick. These didn't have
this
much.
This is how you
silly
use the
drama.
Stick.
Like, yeah,
I'm taking
right.
you. Here's first gear. Here's second gear.
So the last one probably was the most dramatic, but it wasn't quite as much as some of those older ones, like from the 50s and 60s. This one's from 1975. So this young woman is a maid. She gets a job as the housemaid at the local mayor's house. And, you know, she even has to go, you know, enter the house from the back door, just like, you know, the servants do. And the parents are very old school, but there's a boy that lives there as well. And they had, grown up knowing each other. And so, she starts working there, and the old lady there, the mom of the household, interviews her and says, okay, well, you know, you're young and pretty and ambitious. I know your mother was a housekeeper, but is this something that you want to do? And the young lady says, well, you know, her name's Laura. There's lots of time for ambition. And the mother says, well, don't get too ambitious, Laura. Remember, some things are beyond your reach. So she's very, very condescending. But she sees John, and John's the young man there. And John notices, says, Laura, you're going to work here? And she says, yes, sir, John, I guess I am. She's like, well, don't, he says, don't call me sir. And so they go off together, and John starts to really become attracted to Laura, and he sees that there's a young lady out to go to come calling for John. He asks Laura to go out and says that that John's gone out, and Laura's like, but she's such a pretty girl. And he's like, nah, she turns me off. And she says, oh, okay, fine. So she goes and tells the young lady that John's not in. And she says, from now on, you have to handle your own romantic affairs on your own. He says, okay. And he's like, oh, that's a great idea. And she says, John, what? And he embraces her and gives her a kiss smack on the lips. And she says, no, don't get any ideas. You're the mayor's son. That doesn't mean you can have anything you want. And he says, no, I wasn't a cheap shot. I really like you. He's like, well, and she says, well, I like you. You're spoiled and selfish. And from that point on, she starts to ignore John. And finally, he kind of corners her again. And, She's like, no, I can't do this. She's like, I'm going to lose my job. And then they end up kissing anyhow in the kitchen. And they end up kind of, he admits that he loves her, but he's like, Laura says, I can't fall in love with you. And you have to go find yourself another toy. And finally, she's out on her day off with her friends. And everyone can tell that she's just not feeling like herself. And eventually, one by one, they kind of leave. And she's just sitting there all alone. And somebody calls her name. Of course, it's John. And it's like, well, I thought maybe you'd be nicer to me if I came to your turf. And she's like, I'm not in the mood to dance. It's like, well, then walk with me. It's a beautiful night. So they walk, and John says, you know, I do love you. Life without you is meaningless. And she's like, we're in different social classes. This isn't meant to be. This can't happen. And she's tossing and turning that night, thinking, you know, that he's going to be disinherited if they actually saw each other. And she comes to work the next day. And overhears a loud argument in the study, and the mother is yelling at John, saying that you're not going to see that girl again if you have any pride, and that Dad is running for re-election and looks like he could be defeated for the first time in 12 years, and that's the last thing they need is that he's dating the help. Like, what a scandal that will be. And so Laura goes in and admits that she's overheard the conversation. And that she said, you know, she'll be leaving. She's going to quit. And the mother says, you know, that would be for the best for all of us. So the next morning, she's packed her bags and is about to leave. And there's John waiting outside. Like, absolutely not. I'm going with you. Think I'm going to stay in this house after they treat the way they treated you? And they embrace and start kissing, and the paparazzi are there. They're out in the bushes, guys. And they say, hold it, kids. Kiss her again, John. And so John says, the press, oh, no. The pictures are going to be all over the newspaper. And sure enough, the next day, Mayor's son in romance with maid. It's like, well, it's done. There's nothing we can do about it now. I think we're going to have to face my parents regardless. And so they go see the mayor, and he's furious at his desk. And she offers, you know, is there anything that I could do to help? Of course, the mayor says, you've done enough already, young lady. And that's how you picture him saying it, but it's not, because the next sentence is, my campaign people tell me this is the greatest thing that could have ever happened. And another guy says, one of the campaign managers says, the mayor was stuck with his rich, high society image. People thought he was lost contact with them until now. And mother says, Laura, I've been a snob and a fool. Can you forgive me? And Laura says, Mrs. Delaney, I'm so happy I forgive the world. And so her story had a happy ending after all. And that was the end. So that was it. Those three stories, they weren't quite as silly as I was hoping. I like them when they get a little bit more dramatic, but they were still entertaining nonetheless.
Was the letters page there?
There was no letters page whatsoever.
Wow. Maybe because of the reprints, maybe? It seems like a lot of them are reprints, right?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't look it up in here. Is that what it looks like? They're reprinted? Is it towards the
Well, I thought you said I thought you said one was in the 70s, one was what you meant is the time periods.
Yeah, that was printed in 1975. So as far as I know, I think that they were just regular current stories.
Okay.
But they I was hoping that they were going to be a little bit more like dramatic, like some of the older ones we've done on everything else and stuff.
Yeah,
they're a little bit more entertaining. These were more like, all three of them were kind of like the girl in the story is almost like making an issue out of nothing. And, you know, causing problems where there aren't any problems. And then finally she realizes there's not any problems and they can be together. So all three stories are kind of like the same way. And I like where there's more, a little bit more drama, where there's, you know, two guys or something like that and fighting over her or whatever, and it's, you know, very dated stories sometimes. I mean, not that these weren't dated, they definitely were, but it didn't have as much drama as some of the other ones, but it's still very enjoyable.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yep.
And now you know where to buy a car from too, so you're set.
What was it? Square Deal Malloy's, I think it was.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going to go next time.
Square Deal
maybe,
Malloy's.
Maybe Jeff is running it now because I'm sure, you know, his dad must have passed by now.
Yeah.
He looked pretty old back in 1975.
All right. Well, I think we're done. Does anybody have anything else?
I'm all done.
I just have an announcement that I wanted to thank you both for joining today. I had a delightful time.
Yeah, that's a great announcement. Wow. So did I. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we all got to meet before the holidays for sure.
Yeah, and happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Yeah, you too.
What's your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
Mashed potatoes with red chili.
I've never had it. Had mashed potatoes.
I was going to say mashed potatoes, too. I've never had it with red chili, though, but I have known of
it's
Mike
called
doing
a New
that,
Mexico
right?
gravy. New Mexican
I
gravy.
I do want to try that sometimes.
I would love to try that.
That's what Thanksgiving's about, is mashed potatoes with red chili in it.
Nice. I think mine would have to be stuffing. I love the stuffing.
I'm very picky with stuffing. Like, I could find some stuffing I like and some stuffing I don't like, so I don't...
You could get very, very good stuffing, and then you could have very, very bad stuffing. That's the problem with that, yeah. But some of the best, that's my favorite. I could just eat that over and over. You know, probably one of the worst things for you, just full of empty carbs, but I love it.
Yeah, so is mashed potatoes, but
that's what Thanksgiving is all
about.
The
red chili magic, yeah.
So, Chris, before we go,
empty carbs and tryptophan.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you don't eat meat. What would be a main dish for Thanksgiving?
We've sometimes gotten like the fake turkey, tofurkey, the like fake turkey things.
Yep.
But honestly, in recent years, Thanksgiving has become less and less of a thing.
Oh.
We don't really actually do all that much on Thanksgiving.
Gotcha.
So sometimes we'll get one of those just because it happens to be Thanksgiving, but I don't even know if we bother doing that this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, when I was a kid, it was more of, and even up to like 10 years ago or less, my mom still tried to kind of keep something going. I think they're going to go over to my sister's house, but that will be they'll be the only ones that are there. And yeah, it's just not. We still do stuff for Christmas and stuff, but Thanksgiving has become kind of not too much of a thing.
Yeah, just low key.
Yeah, I like having the long weekend though.
Oh yeah,
that's all.
Everyone have Thursday and Friday.
Yeah,
Mike, you too.
I have all week off.
Oh, well, good for you.
Yeah,
you got Thursday and Friday, and Monday. The following Monday, I took a vacation day.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. I only have one day that's a holiday. The rest I have to take my own leave.
Okay. Well, I hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving.
You
great
too.
Weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah.
And
enjoy your vacation, Mike.
You can reach us on Twitter at MythMakingETC. That's Chris. Rob is at Rob Krieger. I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. You can find us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. At Facebook, Geek Brunch Podcast, click the like button. And we'll be back in hopefully 2 weeks.
That's right.
We don't have a Patreon, but if you wanna give us money, you can just use PayPal.
Yeah, PayPal.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, some older comics are not that cheap, so every bit helps.
Yeah, I don't know what led me to this I was looking at this comic book. I don't know what I was looking at, but I was in our database and I was just hitting next, and I ran across this comic book called Dexter Comics. And
Dexter?
Dexter Comics, yeah, not the serial killer, but it's from the 40s. And man, does it look awesome.
Do you need, we could you use some a PayPal to help fund that?
Yeah, I'd like to fund these. I don't think they're that expensive. I tried to go find it on eBay, and like I can get number one a 7.0 for $222.
Yeah, I think we need to. Yeah, can you put your PayPal information
Yeah,
on it?
put your
Put us
PayPal, send
all
me.
of our PayPals on the link to
I'd
the
like to get a
podcast.
copy of this. The art is so weird. It's weird, very
I'm
weird
looking at it
looking.
too. It's cartoony.
Yes, very much, but I like it a lot. Like
It's very good. Yeah,
it's not
very
quite
good.
Archie, but I don't know, it's a cross between Archie and Mad Magazine or something. It's weird.
I find it like a cross between Archie and like the 50 pinup art.
Yeah.
You know, with the
This
way
guy
the
looks
lines are
like a
drawn.
pervert, though, Dexter. Yeah,
Dexter?
he's
Yeah.
got a beautiful woman, and he looks like he's attracted to other women. From every cover, it seems like his girlfriend shouldn't be putting up with this shit.
Well, yeah, he's stepping on her feet in one.
Yeah.
He took her to the drive-in. Do you see the took her to the drive-in up on the hill so they don't have to
Yeah.
pay?
So
Got
they
a
don't have,
telescope so
and
they can
she's like,
watch the
"What a
movie.
cheapskate!" Yeah, I want to read these comics. These would be good. All right, well, we can wrap up with that, and we'll see you guys after Thanksgiving. I hope you have a safe and wonderful holiday, guys.
You as well.
Yeah,
All right.
you do the same.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Right.